All right, good morning. Welcome into Hump Day, halfway through the week. Thank you for listening here on the program. The phone number, 888-710-4ISN. The old social media sports writer, sports, R-E-I-T-E-R. Nico Scarlatos is filling in again for Ryan Hickey. We think Ryan's back tomorrow, but who knows if he's ever returning. In the meantime, at NSCAR, the number 10 for our fill-in producer. Great show lined up for you. I just it's early out here on the West Coast, all right? What is it? It's 7 a.m. About 40 minutes ago, only because I love Ohio because my wife is from there. I don't usually do radio hits in the morning. I went on with the guys at 92.3, our incredible Odyssey affiliate in Cleveland, Ken Carmen and the dudes down there. And we had a really interesting conversation on why they think, I was more skeptical, LeBron should go back to Cleveland. It's got in my brain, so I'm just going to bring that up later in the show. We'll sort of dive into that a little bit. I've got a warning for you about fighting people on golf courses. I don't know if you saw this, but apparently if you're a jerk and you pick a fight in a golf course, there's a chance, it's a non-zero chance, the person you're deciding to fight was a hockey enforcer. And that will go badly for you. I've almost been in several golf fights in my life. And I'm not a big guy. Sometimes I confuse myself for one, which is a mistake, like this guy did. I'll tell those stories later in the show. Nikola Jokic makes a decision worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Not shocking, but it leaves the door open for something that would be a surprise. We'll talk about that. It is a Wednesday. We have Start Bench Cut. I'm really excited. Ashley Nicole Moss on the show, one of my former tri-hosts. She was the co-host on Beyond the Arc when I was at CBS Sports for a while. She does a show there. She's got a show coming up on BET. She's great. We'll have her on the program. We'll do buy or sell. We'll take your phone calls. We'll get into a bunch of stuff. There is sometimes a disconnect between, and it's not just the media, between me and you, sports fans, and some of the athletes that we root for. And Kevin Durant epitomizes this. There is, from Kevin Durant, sometimes, for his level of greatness, what from a distance feels like, from him, a smallness, a pettiness, a thin-skinned reality to his excellence. And he was on LeBron James, and I'm sure you've seen these making the rounds, LeBron James podcast, Mind the Game, with Steve Nash, his former coach in Brooklyn, and they had a long-ranging conversation. And it's very interesting stuff. But it crystallized for me why sometimes athletes who are outstanding, like Kevin Durant, have expectations that we praise them regardless of the actual season's outcomes, championships they do or don't win. It reminded me that in any walk of life, and it's certainly true in sports, but it's true in everything, when you get really successful, I'm speaking from a distance here, when you get very wealthy, when you are celebrated, when you are surrounded by sycophants, it is really, really hard to hear the criticism that is legitimate. And therefore to have the goals and the habits and the focus and the hunger to accomplish the very things that would silence people saying, I don't know, man, maybe you should have won an NBA championship when it was you and Harden and Kyrie Irving. And I bring this up a lot because it's a dagger of insight from Pat Riley. This is the disease of more personified. And for Riley, the idea was, and this applies to Aaron Rodgers, this applies to Clayton Kershaw back in the day, this applied to, but it's not just me picking on Kevin Durant. There are these great athletes who get, it's the old Icarus, right? Was it Icarus who flew close to the sun? They think they've already made it. And those of us that are watching sports, because we love greatness, when they don't accomplish it, and we say so, there's this rebuke from these athletes or these coaches, these players. There's this pettiness. There's this, how dare you criticize me, you mere peasants of the sports world? Because they've lost track of the very thing that makes them great and makes them worthy of celebration. And for Pat Riley, the disease of more was, you win a bunch of championships, you get a bunch of glory, you get a bunch of attention, and then everybody wants to get paid. Everybody wants to get their shine. Everybody wants to get what they're going to get, and you start to lose the very thing that made you great. But we're at a place, that was in the 80s. We're at a place now where you can be the 50th or 60th best NBA player on the face of the planet, and your great-grandkids won't have to work. And by the way, good for you. I want everybody to make their money. I want Nico to find $2 billion on the way home. I want everyone to be set. But if you're the 50th or 60th best tennis player in the world, you have a nice life. but your kids are going to work. If you're the 50th or 60th best golfer in the world, you have a nice life, but your kids are going to work. If you're the 50th or 60th best lacrosse player or table tennis player or radio host, I'm not saying I'm in that rank, I'm just saying, or producer or salesman or insurance person or principal, you have a nice life, but your kids are going to work. There's a disconnect. There's a disease of more now for athletes who haven't accomplished more than they should have or even what they should have. And Kevin Durant kind of told himself in this conversation, I don't want to overstate it. He's in the middle of a nuanced take about how in Brooklyn they didn't succeed. And he talked a lot about injuries and how Steve Nash didn't get to coach as much as he should have, which, by the way, is a pretty galling, it's a lot of chutzpah to put out there when KD was, not to me, but was widely viewed by NBA people as instrumental in Steve Nash being let go because, according to other NBA reporters I've talked to, it was KD's people leaking things about Steve Nash not being the guy. But this is, in essence, and I want you to listen to this, Kevin Durant, having expected when he went to Brooklyn, having paired up with two of the best players in the NBA at the time, having got to chosen his destination, having been in an Eastern Conference that wasn't that difficult, and not even making a conference finals, he expected you and me to throw flowers at his feet rather than say, you know, man, he probably could have, should have done more.
The dialogue around the league, the discourse around the league, they don't truly appreciate the journey sometimes of what goes on. Even the ones that don't work out. Right. You can still see some beauty in the Sacramento Kings that didn't win the chip.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or your Phoenix Suns that didn't win the championship. Yeah. Like, it's if you really love the game of basketball, you can pull great things from all of that stuff. And that's what I tend to do with that Brooklyn situation.
I mean, no, you can't. If your argument is that you should find beauty in the Sacramento Kings when they don't win championships, then the Sacramento Kings have been the most beautiful organization over the last 30 years in the NBA. This is a guy not grasping and understanding that it's not my job. And forget me. I criticize people for a living. So you want to criticize me, you want to call me a liar on Twitter, LeBron, whatever, that's fine. You, wherever you are, he's talking to you. How dare you not praise Kevin Durant? How dare you have a dialogue that says, man, I can't believe KD's big toe stepped on the line, instead of, in his view, saying, KD is a genius and the beautiful basketball gave us as a gift from the basketball gods, and oh, why didn't he get his chip? This is ridiculous, but it gives some insight into why Aaron Rodgers, who's amazingly talented, has become, for me, insufferable. I'm not talking about dudes that aren't very good. I'm not talking about guys that were the 6th or 7th or 8th best player on their team, or the 20th or 21st or 22nd best quarterback in the National Football League in any given year. I'm talking about the Aaron Rodgers and the Kevin Durants, and there was a time when this was Clayton Kershaw, who want us to pretend that we don't watch sports to watch winners. Sports are literally, I shouldn't have to say this to KD, are literally defined by keeping score. It's one of the things I love about playing pickup basketball. It's one of the things that I love about playing tennis. I'm going with my buddy Greg to Topgolf tonight. I'm not a great golfer. And I kicked his you-know-what last time. You know why? Because we keep score. Anytime you go to Topgolf with a friend, he says, let's just hit the ball and not keep score, stop your friendship. That's not what sports are about. That's not how it works, dude. And that's true with the most amateur, I need to lose weight, what is intermittent fasting level that I live at. These are professional athletes. The goal is literally to win championships. Look, there's been an entire constellation of all-time greats or would-be greats or amazing athletes who haven't achieved what they're supposed to. Clayton Kershaw went through this for a really long time. And I'm just bringing up Kershaw because he's the legend. I'm not trying to pick on him. He's the legend's pick in the All-Star game. He just got to 3,000 strikeouts. He's at the twilight of his career where you really start to think about his excellence. And he got, not one, but a couple World Series wins. But there was a long stretch where he couldn't and didn't perform at the level that he should have. And I know baseball's a little different because you can't impact the game the same level. Not true for starting pitcher, not true for Kershaw. Not true for Kershaw in the moments where he was the difference maker, or wasn't. Thank you, by the way, Clayton, Cubs World Series, in part because you didn't. Anyway, Dan Marino, still thought of as that guy. John Elway was that guy until his last two seasons. Phil Mickelson was the best player on the tour not to win a major till he did. And then he still gave away a U.S. Open. And this is old school, but he went out and did a double bogey on the 18. Phil doesn't go out at the U.S. Open when he plays, whatever, you guys should celebrate that. He goes, I bleeped up. Hell, I'll point the finger at my own team. The Cubs, literally for 100 years, were the definition of heartache and heartbreak. Kevin Durant's telling me I should have celebrated the magic and the beauty? No, dude. Get out of here. Get out of here. Indy last year. You think the Pacers and their fans in Halliburton are sitting around going, let's make a documentary and a photo. Let's make an Apple Photos Google slide thing and just like watch it over. No, man. It's about winning. It's about championships. Can you imagine Kobe Bryant's reaction or Michael Jordan's reaction or Tiger's reaction or Muhammad Ali's reaction or Bob Gibson's reaction or any other stone cold winner through history's reaction to, you should celebrate me for being almost good enough. Cool, KD, can you celebrate me if I am almost accurate in my reporting on you when you say these things? Is that how that works? KD, it's Bill Ryder. Why can't you just see the effort I put in? Why does the discourse have to be so hard? And I understand he's having a longer-ranging conversation. And you should listen to it. I'm not trying to take it out of context. This is the guy who did have burner accounts and criticized critics and goes at people, who feels all the feels. This impacts his performance. Kevin Durant's never won a championship without Steph Curry. And he has bounced from place to... He's a mercenary who doesn't actually succeed. This impacts him. Aaron Rodgers is the most talented quarterback, I have to imagine, in the history of the NFL, who has been abysmal in NFC championship games, in conference championship games. He happens to have played them in the NFC because of his years with the Packers. 1-4. These guys have gotten to a point where they're surrounded by so many sycophants, and they can cut out everybody else. They have so much power and money in the microphone that they've lost sight of the fact that winning is the goal. Winning is the thing. Kobe Bryant was right. If you are the person that finishes second, you're the first loser. And by the way, Kevin Durant's not even the first loser when he's not with the Warriors. He's not even close. He's like the 12th loser or the 7th loser or this past year with Phoenix, the 19th loser. He wanted in that clip, in that interview, to celebrate the Phoenix Suns a few years ago when they lost to the Milwaukee Bucks. The Phoenix Suns had one bite at the apple. They were up 2-0 in that series. Chris Paul's never won a title. Chris Paul didn't have the advantage of going, he did play with Steph, but not at the right time. And now the Suns are a debacle. And Kevin Durant's part of that debacle, no longer there, but was part of the... And we're supposed to celebrate Phoenix? No, man. Celebrate Milwaukee. Celebrate the Bucks winning the whole thing. Look, there's a context to this. He did say, and so while I'm on the game, I'll let you listen, that he wants to win championships.
Of course we want to win and go to the chip. Nice. But it's little small moments that I can appreciate throughout a year, even though we don't add up to winning. And a lot of people don't understand that. But we that is in our DNA and our blood. Like, we look at the game of ball like that.
I mean, come on, dude. What do you mean we don't understand that? I'll go back to my Cubs analogy. Was it 2003? I've tried to block it out of my brain. Year for the Cubs was incredible. I have all kinds of memories. I have all kinds of magical moments. And they're all tainted. It's not his fault, by the way. It's Moses Alou's fault. By Bartman, by that game. I was there. I wasn't in the ballpark. I was on Waveland. I drove from where I live in Des Moines, Iowa, to that place, and then drove home and was depressed for the next 20 years. But the point is, we do understand. We do get it. Now, there are some athletes. There aren't many, and Kevin Durant's not one of them. There are the rarest and the rarest of the rarest who are so captivating in their greatness that even when they don't win, they pull you in. Shohei is that guy today. Tiger was that guy. It didn't take him long to win early on. Conor McGregor was that guy. Caitlin Clark is a current example of that who hasn't won. The thing is, LeBron was that guy when he got into the league. They come with this promise of greatness. If Shohei had never won a World Series, especially having gone to the Dodgers, of course that becomes a part of the discourse, to use his word. If Tiger, in that incredible moment at the Masters when he was a kid, when he walked up 18 and everyone was following him, had somehow put up a 9 and lost and then won one major going forward, of course that would have been the discourse. If Conor McGregor, after his first UFC title, got his ass handed to him again and again and again and again, like that golfer I'm going to bring up later against the hockey player, of course that's... If Caitlin Clark never wins a championship with the Fever in the WNBA, that will become the discourse. This to me, and I wanted to bring it up, is just the schism, it is the distance between how fans view things and how these athletes who lose their way view things. Look, Kobe was not a perfect guy, but he was a perfect competitor. Michael Jordan, perfect competitor. There's something missing in Kevin Durant. There's this need to be validated and celebrated without accomplishing the thing that we celebrate you for. I know a lot of rich people. I live in a community in Los Angeles that is obnoxious with rich people. And what I've learned about rich people, and most of them, like, all these guys are my friends, and some of them are listening. And if you're listening and you're my friend who's really rich, I'm not talking about you, unless it's one of you. Then I'm definitely talking about you. They always think they're the smartest person in the room on every conversation. That's fine. In my community, other than, you know, maybe 1% of us, myself included, everyone in this community is a multi-multi-millionaire. They have multiple. It's weird. Good for them. I think it was Hemingway, maybe it was Fitzgerald, who said, rich people aren't like you and I. But what I've realized is they aren't even famous, and in every room they walk into, they are the boss. They are in charge. They are told how smart they are. I cannot tell you how many times I have been to a party in my community where someone who doesn't know anything about sports wants to have a conversation about the NBA. I'm like, all right. And they mispronounce, you know, they start with, that Giannis is pretty good, and then it devolves to them telling me how I'm wrong on something they don't know anything about. It's because they're just not used to people telling them, other than their wives, that they're wrong. They're just not used to it. These are non-famous people, right? Think about the difficulty, it must be human nature, in having that same level of success, fame, wealth, people around you telling you you're great, but also being famous, being KD or LeBron or any of these folks. I'm not saying it's easy. The difference is you can walk to a party and lecture me about why Giannis isn't the best player in the NBA, and as I try not to roll my eyes, and you can still go run your Fortune 500 company or your startup or whatever the hell these people do for a living, their trust funds, whatever, and do their thing. It's not true in sports. And Kevin Durant and Aaron Rodgers are a perfect example. It crystallized when I heard this, that these dudes, thinking they're worthy of praise for not winning, cuts off a critical piece of what they need to win against similar level talents who do have the hunger, who do have the fire, who don't need my praise, who actually don't care what I say, who are going to go out there and dominate people like Kevin Durant. Durant's not a loser, Rodgers is not a loser, but they're not the winners they should be for reasons like this. All right, 888-710-4ISN. 888-710-4ISN. If you want to give us a holler, if you want to chat, if you want to talk, 888-710-4476. If the numbers and the letters get confusing, no judgment. I do it sometimes, right? I call in, you know, what's up, Bart? But then I push the wrong number. 888-710-4ISN. If you want to give us a holler. I'm going to tell golf fight stories after the craziest video I've ever seen next year on Righter Than You. All right, welcome back into the show. By the way, I don't dislike Kevin Durant, but I'm not going to sit here and pretend that he's a five-time champion because he made the second round of the playoffs and there were magical moments I'm supposed to celebrate. Curtis over on the old X has it right. Hey, sports writer, I think Herm Edwards, you play to win the game. Hello. Hello, you play to win the game. You play to win the game. Not if you're having a fun round of golf. Then you're supposed to just play for fun. Here's the thing. I was just telling this to Nico. I'm probably in a very unhealthy level, a very competitive person. As I think I've talked about on the show, and I believe my former producer, Tom DeCelestino, called me a psychopath over this following bit of information, and my friends make fun of me for this. I used to play basketball a lot. I used to play softball. I kept hurting my ankle, so I moved to tennis. I play tennis now. I need to compete, and I'm in a bunch of leagues. They obviously keep score in those leagues. It's a league, but I play socially all the time, and I keep a file of every social match and the score that I've ever played in the last 4 years. And people think that's psycho. I want to compete. When I'm playing golf, it's a little different. I just want to go out there. In fact, I'm going to play Top Golf today. No, it's not real golf. But I want to win. I want to compete. But I'm not a great golfer. I want to drink several Budweisers, drink the drink of your choice, and just play, right? And there's like a line for me where like, oh, yeah, I'm losing, I'm swinging well, and then I have one more sip of beer and it all goes downhill. It's probably about three beers. I didn't realize that's a dangerous thing to do. I don't know if, Nico, good morning. How are you? Happy Wednesday. Your last day working before Ryan comes back in theory?
Yes, that is correct.
Are you a golfer?
I am. I'm pretty horrible. I've never broken 100, but I do have fun on the golf course.
Okay, so I've shot in the 80s, and I'm if I went out today, I'd shoot somewhere between 92 and 120. It really, there's a range. Because the wheels can come off when I get pissed off. All right. I don't know if you saw this, and I don't always bring up the weird videos that are going viral, but there was a golfer playing very slow, which is annoying. Two pet peeves of mine in golf. People that play way too slow, unless they're, you know, 65 or 70 or older than you give them pass, and people who hit into you multiple times. No, I don't care about age on that. And there's a video out there of a couple guys, a twosome, playing crazy slow, and it looks like they're teeing their ball up slowly, and they're just being jerks about it. And a foursome comes up, and they videotape this, and they start being like, get it going! And they jaw back and forth, and everyone's being obnoxious. And then the very drunk guy, it appears he's drunk, who's teeing the ball up and going slow. This is where too many Budweisers can backfire on making golf a great day. Decides to challenge one of the dudes and starts screaming, you want to go? Starts acting all crazy. They get in a fight, and the big dude literally throws him in the pond. And the guy comes back, and the big guy's like, stay down, and keeps grabbing his neck. This guy looks like a Game of Thrones, the mountain character, and beats the daylight. It turns out this guy's name is Nick, the guy that won the fight, Tarnaski. If you don't know him, it's because he was an enforcer in the NHL. Played a lot of minutes, and it's been described by hockey experts, with more expertise than I have, he would fight while trying to play hockey. He would not play hockey and accidentally fight. He was a professional fighter. It is an amazing video. I will try to retweet it. You should find it. But it's just a warning to be careful. I've got two. Have you ever been in a fight or a near fight on the golf course? I have two stories.
I have never been in a fight in general unless
in your life.
Like wrestling with my brother, but I don't count that.
Okay. I've been in a few. Shouldn't have done it. Oh, so the first one, when I was 18 or 19 years old, I went to the University of Missouri. I had to get in-state tuition, long story short. I lived in my aunt and uncle's garage in Chillicothe, Missouri, next to their boat, so I could complete a full year of being in Missouri and get in-state tuition. And I worked at various places, and they had a membership to the local golf course. And I love being in Chillicothe, but there was nothing to do. I didn't know anybody. I was 18, small town. I golfed 30 holes a day some days. When I wasn't working, I would go golf. And I got to where I was shooting in the 80s, and I'm not this good anymore, but I could hit the ball a good 270, 280. And I once basically hit into a guy and his kid and crushed it, and the guy was like, please don't do that again. Like, no problem, sorry. And then on the next hole, a bunch of guys were like, hit it, because the guy was in front of me. I'm like, no, I can hit it that far. They're like, that guy's 300 yards. And I'm like, okay. And I took out my driver, and I crushed the ball. It was downhill, it was downwind, and the ball hit him in the leg. And he attacked me with a golf club. He literally ran, 300 yards, and I ran away screaming. And then I bought him a golf, an 18-hole golf round, because that was my bad. I probably shouldn't have hit into him once before and then him in the leg. My bad. And then another time, we had a bunch of guys that kept hitting into us, and my brother, who was a scratch golfer, took out whatever it was, his 5-iron, and hit it into those guys and hit their golf cart, and then they stopped. Those are my two near-fight experiences. If any of these people had looked like a 6'4", 6'5", mountain of a man who might have been a hockey enforcer, I would not have been like, you ought to go! So don't do it. That's my point. And by the way, we live in an era now where everybody have everything on camera, right? At least when I was an 18-year-old running away from Johnny Chili McCarthy Smith or whatever that guy's name was, there's nobody videotaping me be like, I'm sorry, as I ran the other direction. Also, Nico, I was on track on that round. That was hole 13 or 14. It was the first time I was ever going to shoot. I've never shot in the 70s. I think I was two over. It was the greatest round. It was my Caddyshack moment. But instead of getting struck by lightning like in Caddyshack, I just hit and I must have shot an 89. I must have been, 13 over for the last five holes because I just was so thrown by the near fight.
Right,
one man attacking me.
Once that happens, you're completely in your own head now, so you have no chance of recovering from that. The best part about the video that you're referring to, though, is the guy keeps coming back. Like,
he gets
knocked down like three or four times.
Stay down!
Has no interest in backing down. It was crazy.
And he was wearing a purple shirt, right? He was a character. And the thing is, I can't tell if the guy that gets just the crap kicked out of him is worthy of some praise, because the ability to keep getting up, there's some Cool Hand Luke, I've never seen it, but there's some famous Paul Newman, is that his name? Scene where a guy, anyway, I don't know. Or he's just really drunk and stupid. Because the Tarnaski, you've seen the video, keeps grabbing his neck and just holds him like a ragdoll and punches him straight down, throws him back down. The guy pops up out of the water, out of the little pond, and comes at him again.
You could tell, too, he's a hockey player because he keeps grabbing the guy's shirt.
Sure.
And that's how they do, like, the hockey fights where they're, like, grabbing the jersey.
He's not a small guy, right? I know dudes, I have buddies who have picked fights. My brother did this once with someone, my family. I'm the tallest guy in my family. We're not exactly giants. Where you pick a fight, I'm not a fighter, but my brother was, and people I'm friends with. And you pick a fight with a smaller guy, and then it turns out he's tougher than you are. Okay. Aaron Judgment, my B, you're 5'4", you can box. I am sorry. This isn't that. You don't have to guess whether this dude is, how big is Tarnaski? He looks like he's 6'5 in the video. He looks like Nikola Jokic, basically. Like, he looks like me, he looks like one of Jokic's brothers.
Surprisingly, Wikipedia says he's only 6'2", but I find that hard to believe.
He looked like he was 8 feet tall. Maybe the other guy was 5'2". Maybe the other guy's a 5'2 tough guy, and he met his match. Amazing. It's worth your time. Nikola Jokic, speaking of Jokic, delayed his extension until next year. He's got 3 years left on his deal. There's a $62 million player option. 2 summers from now, he can make more money down the line. That's probably what's going to happen. I will just say this, and there's no take here, just a little of information for you. I don't think this is a very big deal. It gives him the opportunity to lock in more money if he wants to do it in a year. There is a sense out there. There's a belief that maybe, right? The belief of the possibility that it could be is not exactly a lock, but he's really good friends with Luka Doncic. And there is a sense across the NBA when I talk to people that Doncic and Joker will eventually play together. That as basically best friends in the league, both from Eastern Europe, both guys who are social together, both guys who feel like they haven't won enough titles. Joker has one. Obviously, Luka has zero. That eventually they're going to pair up somewhere. Now, that could be Joker just riding out his contract in Denver and then eventually forcing his way out. That could be Luka deciding not to sign an extension in L.A. I don't know. I'm just saying it's worth keeping an eye on as both these guys make moves that would lead eventually to freedom, and we have a ways to go for Joker to be there because it does feel like they want to play together. All right, 888-710-4ISN. So what we've learned is Kevin Durant whines too much, don't pick fights with people on the golf course, and it would be good to be Nikola Jokic. I'd love to turn down hundreds of millions of dollars. That would be, if you got $1 million tomorrow, Nico, just $1 million tomorrow, well, you get on the train today, and a creepy-looking guy comes up to you and goes, I'm your fairy godfather, and hand you a bag, and there's $1 million in there. What are you doing?
This is probably going to be a boring answer, but I'm probably getting my own place because I think I'm getting sick and tired of living at home with my parents.
Okay. I mean, for $1 million, you could buy a place. And yeah. You could get a place in the Village.
There you go. Exactly.
You could be the new Bob Dylan. Have you seen that movie? City. I haven't seen that movie, so I don't even know what that reference means. All right. Also, by the way, because I brought it up yesterday, apparently, and EJ from Maggie and Perloff went last night, and apparently Superman's amazing. Because the trailers look terrible. I'm not going to lie. I thought it was going to be awful.
Might have to go check it out later.
I was going to go last night with my son. They had a pre-showing at our theater. The tickets were $35 bucks each or something.
Yeah, no chance.
Yeah, unless Lois Lane is going with me as my date, I am not interested. But I'm going to go next week. I'm excited. All right, we're going to do a little start bench cut here on the show.
It's start bench cut on Writer Than You.
All right, Bill. So I saw this on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. Hard Rock Bet put out their top 5 Eastern Conference duos.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you the top 3. I could also give you 4 and 5 after, but I'll give you the top 3 in no particular order, and then you tell me where you're going. Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner of the Orlando Magic, Jalen Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns for the Knicks, and Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley for the Cavs.
That's a really good. So this is for this upcoming season, not I'm building for the future. It's 25-26,
yeah,
1 year.
In just 25-26,
right now.
Yep.
I could go any order. You could pull any order out of a hat and it would not feel wrong. I'm going to go. This won't be popular. I'm going to start Mitchell and Mobley. I don't think Donovan Mitchell has that many years left at the top level. I think it's a couple. I mean, it's a couple. He's going to be 30 this year. And I still think Mobley has a higher ceiling. And Mobley, if it weren't for Wembanyama, could be Defensive Player of the Year 3 of the next 4 years, potentially. Holmgren would be in that mix, too. So I'm going to start Mitchell and Mobley. I'm going to go next. I'm going to bench. Next up is Banchero and Wagner for me. And that's betting a little bit on what's to come. And I'm going to bench Brunson and Cat. I will say this. If you ask me to pick one of those guys for next year, I would take Jalen Brunson. So it just tells you my personal view on Karl Anthony Towns and his level of reliable excellence when it matters most. But That's a great question. That's very, very microscopic in separation. What order would you go if you were forced to do it?
So I was going to go, I know I'm biased here, but I was going to go Brunson and Cat one. That's who I'm starting. Okay. Banchero and Wagner on the bench. And then I was going to cut Mitchell and Mobley.
Man, I think...
But again, you can't really go wrong in any order.
No,
so.
You can't. That's a good... Who are the other two duos?
So number four on the list was Kristaps Porzingis and Trae Young, now together in Atlanta.
Yeah, not even remotely in the same ballpark. Okay.
And then five was Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey.
I mean, that's a really good one if Embiid can play more than 11 games.
Right. That's the thing.
I keep forgetting about Philly.
Yeah. It's... You don't know how to look at them because they were so bad last year, but you know that the talent is there. It's just if they can stay healthy.
They could finish second or 14th in the East next year.
Which is crazy to think about. Let's talk about some teams that don't get a lot of love. The Wizards, Hornets, and Jazz. They were the three worst teams in the NBA this past season. But which one has the most exciting future of the three? Start bench cut.
Oh, man. This one's hard, too, but for the wrong reasons. The last question was all like, yeah. This question's like, man. I'm going to start the Jazz, even though they're in the West. I'm not even sure that's the right answer, but I do think Danny Ainge is going to figure it out. There's a lot of talent on that team. They have a lot of picks. They're in the East. They could be the 4-5 seed next year. I'll bench the Wizards. I kind of actually like what they're building. And I will cut the Hornets, who I just... And I like LaMelo if he's healthy. I just don't have any faith in whatsoever.
It's funny.
Those are bad basketball teams.
I saw a post on X the other day, and it was like LaMelo being labeled as like the veteran. And it was just like, this guy's considered a vet now?
And by the way, when he is healthy, he is so dynamic. But even when he's dynamic, there's a question about whether or not his level translates to winning. He puts up a lot of stats, but does it actually work in defense? But he's not even healthy often enough to be sure that it's going to be good. I mean, the thing is, one of those three teams will probably be really good in 3 years because youth and depth do matter now. It's just hard to know which of those teams' young guys are going to break through and stay healthy in LaMelo's case.
Over to the NFL, we've got a few first-year head coaches, so we're going to go with Aaron Glenn, Brian Schottenheimer, and Liam Cohen. Who is going to be the most successful in year one, start bench cut? I left out Ben Johnson because I wanted to make sure that there was no bias involved. Yeah.
All right, so this makes me sad. I'm going to jump to the cut. I knew his dad really well, loved his father. I don't know Brian Schottenheimer, but I love that family. I'm rooting for him. I'm going to cut him. I don't have any confidence in the Cowboys, and it sure feels like they hired a guy. I hope I'm wrong. I would love to be wrong. Feels like they hired a guy who will roll over whenever Jerry says to. That's what or real candidates don't want to coach for Jerry. All right, so sorry, Mr. Schottenheimer. Sorry, Brian. Put him aside. It's a good question. Liam Cohen's really interesting because Jacksonville every year just feels like the team that can't break through, can't get it done, can't. And he was the offensive coordinator in Tampa Bay, where he worked wonders with Baker Mayfield. So I actually think that's a really interesting possibility. But I'm going to bench him and I'm going to start Aaron Glenn. Again, we won't know. And this is the thing about coaches, guys that are first time head coaches, you don't know until you know. I think it's one of the hardest things to assess. I think it's as important a decision almost in the NFL as picking a quarterback. But at least a quarterback, you can see the tape of them playing quarterback in college, right? There are assessments. There is no equivalent for a first-time coach. Being a coordinator is a different... It's almost like being a backup quarterback and trying to figure that out. Maybe, I don't know. I think Aaron Glenn has shown a level of professionalism and the people that he's hired. There's talent in New York, so I think that helps. That's a really good question. And by the way, if you had thrown Ben Johnson in here, I probably would have started Ben Johnson, but I wouldn't have felt great about it. There's a whole range of possible outcomes for the Bears, too, this year. 4 wins, 11 wins, nothing would surprise me.
It's so unfair to say this because you have to give Aaron Glenn a fair chance, and we're going to, but for whatever reason, I just see the word Jets, and it instantly is like something's going to go wrong here.
I will only say this, and this doesn't mean it's going to be the same. I always felt that way about the Lions. And they hired some defensive coordinator who came out of New Orleans. Not a big personality, different than Aaron Glenn, but right, just sort of like, all right, here we go. And you got a Jared Goff. And Dan Campbell shocked me. And some of that was hiring the right coordinator. So you're right. I'm hoping he can overcome the Jets history.
Over to Major League Baseball, some impressive stats that I want to get your take on. We've got some guys that are in the race to possibly hit 60 home runs this year. Aaron Judge is on the verge. We were talking about him hitting 400. I think that's become a little more unrealistic now. So we'll go with a 350 batting average or a sub-2 ERA for a starting pitcher. I know guys like Scooble and Skeens have gotten off to fantastic starts this year. What do you think is the most impressive stat amongst the three?
Oh, man, that's a great question. That's a great question. So the last guy to hit 250 or higher appears to have been Josh Hamilton in 2010. That's a long time. Do you know the last sub-ERA in Major League Baseball? I don't. I'll look it up.
I believe Jacob DeGrom in 2018 had a 1.70. Okay.
Yep. Oh, Verlander had a 1.75 in 22.
Oh, there you go. Okay. So I guess it's a little more common.
That's a tough one. All right, I love these baseball questions. I'm gonna start a sub-2 ERA, even if it's happened a few more times. I just think it's amazing, and I've told you I'm a sucker for pitching duels. I love watching guys pitch at that level. I probably should do batting average next up, but I was so enamored with the idea that Judge was going to hit 400 that 350 feels like a real come down, real letdown. I'll go batting average anyway. In large, especially because you have, and now we have all this focus on exit angle and you know, the sort of three outcomes of either get a home run or a walk or a strikeout, and it's okay. And so batting average has gone down, his on-base percentage has gone up, and guys have basically given away consistency for home run, for power. I hate it. So 350 is pretty rare. And 60 homers probably a little tainted for me just based on how much in baseball we've and I know it's behind us, but the steroids thing for me lingers. That's a great question, though. What would you go? What order would you go?
I was going to go starting the 350 batting average just because I think there's so many guys now that are home run or nothing, that average has with OPS and all these crazy analytical stats, average has kind of gotten lost in all that. So I think it's cool when someone still can hit 350. Last one for you, quick one. With Wimbledon going on right now, I thought this was interesting. Best annual sporting event, Wimbledon, the Masters, or the Kentucky Derby?
On TV, right? Because I would 100% start the Kentucky Derby if I was 7 Mint Juleps in and wearing a stupid hat.
Have you ever been to the Kentucky Derby?
No, I almost covered it once. I'd never been to any of those events. And it was in my contract at CBS when I was there that they were required to send me, and they never did. Thanks, CBS. Oh. I'm going to start Wimbledon. I'm a tennis guy. I'm gonna bench the Masters. I'm not as into the Masters post Tiger, but it's still great. And I'm gonna cut the Kentucky Derby. I just don't get horse racing. I mean, I get if I was like an excuse to party, sure. But you could tell me, I don't know, we're gonna go celebrate a light pool, and if there's 4,000 people there, we're all drinking mint juleps, partying. Cool. I'll go to the light pool event. I don't care about horse racing. Horse racing is fun in person, though. But I'm just, it ain't my thing. Let's talk some hoops. Ashley Nicole Moss from CBS Sports, my former employer, joins us next here on Rider Than You.